up front, everyone, we are going to say this. This is going to speak to heterosexual relationships because in the movie, it is a heterosexual relationship. We understand that the variety of possibilities of how relationships look are radically more profound and varied than what we are talking about in this episode. But because When Harry Met Sally is a relationship between a heterosexual man and a heterosexual woman, that is what our discussion is going to be about. Hi, and welcome to Gen Extemporaneous. This is a podcast where I come up with an idea, I do some research, I grab a bottle of wine, I bring everything to Mark, and he pontificates. In today's episode, we once again return to the ongoing episode arc, Life Lessons from 80s Movies, and our subject today will be the 1989 classic rom-com, When Harry Met Sally. Prepare yourself to explore topics like, how are women's sexual fantasies different than men's? Will he never really leave her for you? And the ultimate conundrum, can men and women really never be friends? I know that many of you are going to mock Mark mercilessly when I point out how he is as high maintenance as Sally Albright, but we're Gen X, and if it hurts his feelings, all the better, because we got our sensitivity chips late in life, and we still deactivate them from time to time when it's a really good joke. Hi, Mark Snedeker.
Hello, Christina LaRusso. Do I really ever turn mine on?
No, they don't.
Right, so today's movie is about relationships, right? And staying together. So I kind of have told this story before, but I think it's worth telling again about what makes a good, solid relationship.
Okay.
I never experienced really relationship trauma between my parents. There was no breakup. There was no divorce. And I think they had a secret on how to stay together. Of course, they had similar interests and they admired each other and blah, blah, blah. But mostly, and I think I've told you this before, what they said was whoever asks to leave has to take the kids.
That's a big threat.
And
when
that
you
was
five
a big
kids.
Threat. We had four children within 5 years of each other and five within 10 years of each other.
Yikes.
But that is, you know, that is how my parents made the relationship work. But there are a lot of
with
other
threats.
Yeah, with a serious threat. I mean, and I think that is, it reminded me of that when we were listening to the stories, the little snippets, the little vignettes of old people's relationships, right?
Well, he was the head counselor at the boys' camp, and I was the head counselor at the girls' camp. And they had a social one night, and he walked across the room. I thought he was coming to talk to my friend Maxine, because people were always crossing rooms to talk to Maxine. But he was coming to talk to me, and he said,
I'm Ben Small of the Coney Island Smalls.
At that moment, I knew. I knew the way you know about a good melon.
But it was very cute, but that reminded me of my parents. So anyway, tell us about this movie we're thinking about today.
The movie is When Harry Met Sally. It was directed by Rob Reiner. It was written by Nora Ephron, the amazing Nora Ephron.
She's pretty great.
She was pretty great. She did a lot of great rom-coms. When Harry Met Sally was kind of like a big one. Prior to that, she had done Heartburn, which was her own story.
Who was in that?
Meryl Streep and Jack Nicholson. And it was her story about being married to Carl Bernstein.
Ah, there you go. The journalista.
Yeah. And so then she also did Sleepless in Seattle.
Yeah.
And then she did.
She's pretty good at rom-coms is what you're telling
me. And then she
only wrote like the best rom-com of all time and maybe like the fourth or fifth best rom-com of all time.
Well, I mean, obviously you mean Sleepless in Seattle was the best rom-com.
No, I definitely don't. Harry Met Sally is the definitive rom-com for our generation and generations to come.
I think it's so much more cleverly written than Sleepless.
It's less maudlin and sappy. Nope.
Sleepless is the best. And then When Harry Met Sally, and then You've Got Mail. I'm going to say.
We're going to disagree on that one.
Of Nora Ephron rom-coms.
Right.
I feel like, and in fact, my son was named after the character Jonah. I saw
the
it.
The Bible.
1992, I saw the film. I was 22 years old. I didn't even think I wanted kids, but I turned to my mother and I said, if I ever have a child, it's going to be a boy. And if I ever have that boy child, his name is going to be Jonah.
All right.
And guess what? Jonah is turning 18 this year.
I know.
And about to graduate.
You should be sitting on a bench in New York somewhere telling this story. And then my son, he just turned 18 this year.
I know. It would be so great if I was that Jewish lady sitting in the deli.
Yeah. I would love to be
that Jewish lady. All right. So the budget on this film was $16 million. The return was $92.8 million. It starred Meg Ryan as Sally Albright. Probably one of the best.
This is her defining role.
This is just what she is so good at. Now
that's why she did 35 rom-coms after this.
She can be dramatic. When a Man Loves a Woman, where she played an alcoholic, it was amazing. She did a great job. But yeah, she's just really good as in a rom-com.
Because she's very likable, right? Mm-hmm.
And relatable.
And has great delivery of comic lines.
And she's just cute, and you want to just root for her.
Right.
Harry Burns was played by Billy Crystal.
Which
hilarious.
I guarantee you, when he was coming up in the business, he was never like, you know what? I'm going to go for the romantic lead.
No, and people actually the critics took issue with him as the Roman, but they said, well, he's very funny, but he's a little bit nebbish. But then
at the same time,
what, like, Woody Allen made a career on being the kind of nebbishy and neurotic. Jess was played by Bruno Kirby, the fantastic actor who had been in The Godfather.
Right.
So, serious actor, but could do comedy.
Oh, he did great.
All right, and then we had, rounding out the main characters, was Carrie Fisher as Marie.
Legend.
Carrie Fisher.
Legend.
Absolute legend.
Can you imagine if she wrote When Harry Met Sally,
it would have been
hilarious. A little bit darker.
Dark. Acerbic.
Yeah.
So the story follows the two title characters, Harry and Sally, from the time they meet at the University of Chicago when they have graduated and they're about to drive across country. And it takes them through 12 years of, they have their own lives and then they meet and then they go on their own lives and then they meet again and they become friends. The film addresses, but fails to resolve, questions along the lines of, can men and women ever just be friends?
Don't worry, I'll answer that for you.
Well, we've got that. We're going to answer all kinds of life lessons. Harry Met Sally is actually the movie, I watched it because I like this one. I turn this one on when I'm feeling blue.
Really?
And it just makes me feel good. In fact, later tonight, I'm going to go home and I'm going to rewatch it. Even though we just watched
Some Harry Connick on.
I am. We're going to talk about Harry Connick.
Yeah.
So ideas for the film began when Rob Reiner divorced Penny Marshall. He was married to Laverne.
That's a lot of talent in one marriage. I'm sure that is almost impossible to be a stable situation when you have two personalities that strong, talents that driven, I can only imagine.
Okay, so in an interview Efron conducted with Reiner, he provided the basis for Harry. Sally was based on Efron and others of her friends, and then Billy Crystal came on board. And he kind of made it funnier.
Billy fucking Crystal.
Right, of course. This would have been after
City Slickers.
Oh my God, with Jack Palance.
Who famously came on stage at the Oscars and said, I crap bigger than that guy.
Yeah, but then he did one-arm push-ups.
I was like, Jack, what are you doing, bro?
Calm down. I mean, you're strong and powerful, Jack.
Yeah, okay.
I wonder how old he was at that time.
Oh, like 80?
No, I don't think he was. I think he looked 80, but I think he was in his 50s.
Yeah.
Probably. And we all looked at him and went, wow, that old man.
Yeah.
Now we're there. Can you do a one-arm push-up?
Sure can't. Definitely cannot.
All right. Efron created kind of the framework, the structure of the film, and created the dialogue based a lot on the conversations that she heard, the sort of exchange she heard between Billy Crystal and Rob Reiner, who were good friends. And in fact, there's that scene where like Sally and Harry are on a split screen and they're talking about Casablanca.
Right.
Now you're telling me you would be happy with Victor Laszlo than with Humphrey Bogart.
When did I say that?
When we drove to New York.
I never said that. I would never have said that.
All right, fine. Have it your way. Have you been sleeping?
Why?
Because I haven't been sleeping.
I really miss Helen.
Do you still sleep on the same side of the bed?
I did for a while, but now I'm pretty much using the whole bed.
God, that's great. I feel weird when just my leg wanders over.
That was really kind of the conversation that would happen between Rob Reiner and Billy Crystal.
Yeah. So that's, Rob Reiner is secretly in love with Billy Crystal.
I mean, maybe.
So I have a quick question for you. We talked about the cast.
Yes.
Two of the actors in this movie have very famous parents. Who are they?
Carrie Fisher has Debbie Reynolds and Eddie Fisher.
That's the easy one. Here's the tougher one.
Who has a famous parent? Bruno Kirby.
Nope.
Who?
So, the guy who played Meg Ryan's beau, who looked like...
the tall blonde guy?
Who looked like Brad from Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Uh-huh.
His name? Stephen Ford. Who do you think his dad was?
John Ford?
No, more famous than John Ford.
A famous actor named Ford?
I didn't say he was an actor. President Gerald R. Ford.
Oh, well, that's not...
He was a president of the United States. Are you joking me right now?
Oh, President Ford actually was a very handsome young man when he was...
He was a football player.
Looking, like at Yale or something.
But that's his son, Stephen Ford.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And also, obviously, the son of Betty Ford of the clinic's fame.
At least Stephen didn't have to make a... Stop.
Wow. I mean, maybe he got a discount.
Do you just go like, Mom, I'm checking into your pool?
Yeah. Mom, I'm just going to come visit you at work, if that's okay, for like 3 months.
Ay, ay, ay. All right. The soundtrack, though, is, I would argue, a fifth character.
Yeah. It's a very good, very poignant soundtrack, would you say?
Yeah. And it's, you know, it really launched that whole... for me, and I was 19 when this film came out, so I was right in this demographic that then dove into the big band sound. So Harry Connick comes in, good looking, young guy.
He's like
fucking talented.
I could do Frank Sinatra.
And he just whipped up all the old standards and made them cool again, which then led to things like Swingers, right? Yep. Where the and Cherry Poppin' Daddies. And I don't know if you did this, but I did this when I was a young 20s. We would go big band night.
And we would go and do
dancing and swing dancing and all of the rest. Everybody was taking swing dancing lessons.
Yep.
Very Gen X thing
it
to do.
It was a Gen X thing to do that I skipped.
So, but the soundtrack was absolutely one of the things. And I will tell you that there are a lot of people who still today in the Gen X generation who really like that kind of music because of When Harry Met Sally. Did you know that the script initially ended with Harry and Sally remaining friends and not pursuing a romantic relationship?
That is a bunch of the natural bullshit right there.
Efron felt that was actually the natural conclusion of the film.
Nope.
Eventually, they realized that it was more appropriate ending for them to marry, you know, very Hollywood.
Yeah.
But they admit that this was generally not a realistic outcome.
Well, what do they know? Bunch of Hollywood liberals.
Let's talk about that in a little while. Let's pull that thread. And maybe we'll pull that thread for a Gen Extemporaneous After Dark.
Oh, that's right. Only the paying customers get to see that one. Yes.
All right.
Exclusivity.
A little exclusivity. When posed the film's central question, can men and women just be friends? Ryan replied, yeah, men and women can just be friends. I have a lot of platonic male friends, and sex doesn't get in the way.
Do they know that?
Crystal said, I'm a little more optimistic than Harry, but I think it is difficult. Men basically act like stray dogs in front of a supermarket. I do have platonic women friends, but not best friends.
Yeah.
Okay. And so 91 currently on Rotten Tomatoes. It's scoring a 91% fresh based on 74 reviews with an average rating of 8. Out of 10. The website's critics' consensus reads, Rob Reiner's touching, funny film set a new standard for romantic comedies, and he was ably abetted by the sharp interplay between Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan. They had phenomenal chemistry. Meg Ryan has, in rom-coms, tends to have just amazing chemistry with everybody. She was in that other movie. What was that movie called? Addicted to Love with Matthew Broderick.
I don't know.
Great chemistry.
There was a period of time there where, in order to get a movie made, what you would do is you would decide, okay, it's a rom-com. What popular song can we name this fucking movie after, and then we'll put it in the soundtrack and that'll help sell the movie?
Name some others that have popular...
I'll think of it. Don't you fret. But that was a thing. 100%.
Okay. All right. So, Mark, let's move on to our first point, our first life lesson. And I don't know if this is a life lesson as much as it's a life warning.
Go.
Are you ready?
I guess.
When you have kids... You never have sex.
Never is a very strong word. Otherwise, there would only be a bunch of single children families running around. But it definitely cuts into your time because children are exhausting little emotional vampires. Right? They, you know, you never know when they're going to want to pee or have a drink of water or have a monster under their bed or whatever the fuck, or just want to, you know, get in your bed with you or crying about some bullshit.
Because it's legit exhausting to put
it
a child
is a, so I always
to tell, back to bed.
Oh, it is. Absolutely.
It is 100% easier to just say, get in bed with me because you're exhausted, especially when the children are very young.
Oh, yeah. The more tired you are, the worse parent you are.
Oh, if you are exhausted, the path of least resistance is the one that you will take, and you will put them in that bed with you, right in between you and your partner.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you will be
effectively
like
a cock block. Literally. But so when Matthew used to wake up and have a hard time getting back to sleep, right? If sticking the whoobie in his mouth didn't work, I would have to, he'd be on his stomach, which I'm sure we were lucky didn't kill him. And I would have to pat him on his back or his butt for like 20 minutes until he fell asleep. And you do that thing where you're like, pat, 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 pat. Okay, he's breathing kind of heavy now. And you start slowing down the pats and then you kind of lightly go away. And he's like, pops his head up. You're like, motherfucker.
God damn it.
You treacherous little fuck. Go back to sleep or I'll give you something to cry about. So I'd have to pat. Of course, sometimes we'd be like, all right, I'm just going to put him in the car seat and drive around until he falls asleep. And then we're just going to leave him in the garage. Is that fine? Can you do that?
I mean, no.
Oh, we didn't do that.
But a lot of driving around in cars, that happens.
And then you just let him sleep in the fucking car seat in the living room or whatever.
Yeah. All right. So all of my sources for everything that I report in this are going to be in the episode notes. So I'm not going to necessarily quote them.
Right.
But they will be in our episode notes.
Fine.
Here is one of the quotes. 86% of respondents to a survey said that they had sex less often since having children, and 73% said their sex life had definitely taken a turn for the worse since kids came on the scene.
All right, look, now I'll go further than that. If you say that you have more sex after you had a child, you are either a liar.
Or you're completely wealthy and you have nannies who are like overnight nannies.
And by the way, it's for some period of time, your good lady wife is not going to really be interested in that.
So I would say that that's accurate. I'm going to give that a thumbs up.
Oh, for sure.
Sally says in the film that she and Joe, you know, celebrated the fact that they weren't married and they didn't have kids. And one of the perks of that was that they could do all of these things in kind of impromptu. They could take off and go on trips. They could have sex on the floor of the kitchen and no one would involve them. And she said, everybody, all of my friends say,
they practically never had sex again. It's true. It's one of the secrets that no one ever tells you. I would sit around with my girlfriends who have kids, and actually my one girlfriend who has kids, Alice, and she would complain about how she and Gary never did it anymore. She didn't even complain about it, now that I think about it. She just said it matter-of-factly. She said they were up all night. They were both exhausted all the time. The kids just took every sexual impulse they had out of them.
Do you think it's hard to get it back once it's gone?
Yeah. First of all, relationships are hard in general.
Yeah.
Right? Children make them. I mean, anybody, you know, that you get that famous kind of psychological trope, which I think is very true, that if you are having a child to try to improve your marriage,
oh, bad
that's
idea.
Like pouring gasoline on a fire, right?
Yeah, that's right.
It's gonna what it does is it stresses you because I mean kids are great and everything, blah blah blah. I love kids, but they're stressful.
Ask me how I know.
Yeah, I'm sure you have an excellent idea. The second point, Christina, that we're going to discuss here is: do the sexes recover from a breakup differently?
In the movie.
Yeah.
What you see is that Harry becomes very, it's almost like he doesn't move on domestically. Like he has, his house seems very empty for the longest time after his ex-wife moves out. He doesn't do anything with the furniture and all the rest. He's just kind of sitting in an empty room. And there's that scene where he's like flicking cards into a bowl. And Sally, presumably she's had, you know, when she announces to her girlfriends that they've broken up,
she had like a whole plan.
I'm fine.
We talked about it for a long time, and I said, this is what I want. And he said, well, I don't. And I said, well, I guess it's over. And he left. And the thing is, I feel really fine. I am over him. I mean, I really am over him. That was it for him. That was the most that he could give. And every time I think about it, I am more and more convinced that I did the right thing.
Boy, you sound really healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm fine.
I prepared for this 3 months ago.
I'm emotionally detached, and she has all of these things that are filling up her time.
Yeah.
Where she's going to do dancing lessons and all of the rest. And she feels like she's really moved on and she's good. And Harry seems to be sort of emotionally grieving the relationship in a domestic way. But Harry is out dating and having sex
right.
quite quickly.
Sometimes he doesn't even wait for the entire relationship to be entirely over. Right? As in the drive to New York, right? He starts hitting on her while he's still with what's her name.
Right.
So but here's something I think that will maybe temper that just a little bit. I want you to imagine a room. Mm-hmm. In that room is like one of those folding lawn chair things, like the plastic, you know, almost like a beach chair, but those like a folding lawn chair.
Yeah. Right?
With the little plastic stripes,
yeah.
you know, that we had in the
70s and 80s. I know, in the 70s and 80s. I got you.
At the other end of the room.
Yes.
There's a television sitting on either a shabby bookshelf or quite possibly cinder blocks and 2x4s, right? And underneath that is a cable box and maybe some kind of game system. A man is happy with that. Mm-hmm. And women will come in and is like, oh, God, look at where how you live and da-da-da. He's like, what? I love this. First of all, I saved all that money on, you know, extra furniture that nobody ever sits on, and I invested into this larger TV. And I'm fine with this. And if friends come over, I have bean bags, right? So men can actually be happy with that. So that also could be a symbol of all that extra shit that he would have in his house was not there for him, right? That was brought by... you know, the person he was in a relationship with, because he was totally fine with that. Now, I'm sure in the movie they actually meant it, you know, more symbolically along the lines of what you're saying, but I'm telling you, you get us a lawn chair and a TV, we're good. You have to have a comfortable bed.
It was the most uncomfortable night of my life.
On the first date back is always the toughest, Terry.
You only had one date. How do you know it's not going to get worse?
How much worse can it get than finishing dinner, having him reach over, pull a hair out of my head, and start flossing with it at the table?
I ask her where she went to school, and she says Michigan State. And this reminds me of Helen. All of a sudden, I'm in the middle of this massive anxiety attack. My heart's beating like a wild man, and I start sweating like a pig. I got so upset, I had to leave the restaurant.
Harry, I think this takes a long time. It might be months before we're actually able to enjoy going out with someone new. And maybe longer before we're actually able to go to bed with someone new.
Oh, I went to bed with her.
You went to bed with her?
Sure.
Huh.
I had sex with her.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm good. Took me like 5 minutes.
And she's talking about dreadful dates where guys reach over and pull out a hair out of her head and floss his teeth. And
My God.
It's terrible.
But they do move on differently, right? The men physically, I think... And that it's a bit of a stereotype, so let's again say that not everybody is going to fit this mold.
Right.
You know, but men in general will move on, at least physically, like, okay, we're broken. I'm single now. Guess I better go find someone to sleep with. Right?
So let me give you some statistics.
Lay it on me.
Ready? So there was a study done on a pretty massive scale, and it got published in the Evolutionary Behavioral Sciences Journal. And the researchers from Binghamton University and University College London interviewed 5,705 participants from 96 countries.
Jesus Christ.
So it's pretty expansive.
Yeah.
And asked them to rate the emotional and physical pain of a breakup on a scale of 1, which is 0, none, no, right. No pain. Physical or emotional, and to 10,
physical,
unbearable. See, there you go. He doesn't.
You break a leg or something?
You've never been in physical pain from a breakup.
No.
Oh. All right. Well, that says something.
I mean, you can, emotionally, you're very upset, but I mean, like, what hurts?
Your heart. You've never had that heart pain in a breakup?
Are you sure that's not just indigestion?
No. Oh, it's so bad. And then your stomach
hurts. Because you
know
you don't actually have feelings there, right?
No, but you're, no, you do. You have that
clenching tightness. No, like emotions, but you don't have emotions
there.
No,
it's not emotional. It's physical. There's that tightness in your chest and then that pain in your stomach.
You're fine.
Yeah, but I mean.
You're fine.
All right, so women. The study indicated that women get more negatively affected, both emotionally and physically, by a heartbreak. Women participants rated their emotional anguish to be 6.84 post-breakup, and the figure turned out to be 6.58 for men.
Not that big of a difference.
Further, women rated their physical pain to be a 4.21, and men's was 3.75. So that's more significant.
I mean, it's statistically significant, but it's not like, you know, I'm at an 8 and you're at a 2 or anything like, excuse me, anything like that.
Yeah. All right. So some they think that there may be an evolutionary aspect to this.
I'm always very skeptical when we try to do that, right? Oh, we're hunter-gatherers and men hunt and women gather, or, you know, a man can have, you know, 20 mates in a lifetime, whereas a woman could only have, you know, a couple or whatever.
Well, but, I mean, that makes sense evolutionarily.
It does knee-jerk, like common sense kind of makes sense. I'm just a little skeptical scientifically because it's overused.
But let me share these statistics with you.
Lay it on me.
A brief romantic, I'm quoting at length, and please see our sources for my citation. A brief romantic encounter could lead to 9 months of pregnancy followed by many years of lactation for an ancestral woman, while the man may have left the scene minutes after the encounter.
I say, it just leads to a nap.
With no further biological investment. It is this risk of higher biological investment that over evolutionary time has made women choosier about selecting a high quality mate. Hence, the loss of a relationship with a high quality mate hurts more for a woman.
I mean, again, it does make sense, but you have to, I mean, if you look at the numbers that you just quoted, that's not like opposite ends of the spectrum, you know? There's enough variation there. I mean, there's enough difference there to say, yes, there is, you know, that's statistically significant, but it's not like men were at like, I'm at a 1 and women are like, oh, I'm at an 8. You know, I mean, that's just not how it is. It's 0.4 different or something like that.
All right. But the study says that men either experience nothing.
I've had that, yeah.
Or may resort to alcohol, drug use, or violence and are less likely to come up with any kind of personal realizations, where women will come out of a relationship, bad breakup, and go, oh, I need to learn something. Like, women will take that time to learn that lesson. So men take longer time than women and struggle more to move on, according to this study.
Do we?
Mm-hmm. In fact, the researchers observed that many male participants suffered from PRG, post-relationship grief, at the time of the study, even if they had parted ways more than a year ago. So what that says to me is this, that men put a Band-Aid on it quickly, but they don't really take time to process the emotions. They just want it to stop hurting. If it hurts, they want that hurt to stop. So they do things to kind of mask the hurt, put a Band-Aid on it. Women will hurt and they will complain and they will have their girlfriends and they will do the ice cream night. Eventually they'll be dancing around the living room to, I don't know, Motown music.
Yeah.
And then the pain will pass and you will move on to whatever, hopefully smarter about making choices. Although often our relationship pickers remain broken. But men quickly move on, have a bunch of sex,
and then
realize that at some point they are still hurting because they've lost someone who may have been of value to them. Now, if that person has never been of value to them, they'll move on.
Right.
It won't be.
I think that's with either sex. And I would buy that whatever the reaction is, in general, a woman's reaction to that is probably healthier and more self-aware than a man's would tend to be, right? One thing that makes men post-relationship mad is jealousy, right? They're more likely to go, I can't believe she's with another man, you know, da-da. That might be more real. I don't know about the, you know, mourning it for a year, but maybe. I mean, it's possible.
So in this situation, though, it's a little bit different. right? Because Sally claims she's done and over it and she's moving on and she does all of the things to feed her soul. Then she kind of starts dating later. You know, it takes a little while. Then she starts dating and she kind of moves on. And then she finds out that Joe, her ex-boyfriend, is getting married.
He just called me up, wanted to see how you were. Fine. How are you? Fine. His secretary's on vacation. Everything's all backed up. He's got a big case in Newark. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting on the phone thinking, I'm over him. I really am over him. I can't believe I was ever remotely interested in any of that. She works in his office. She's a paralegal. Her name is Kimberly. She's supposed to be his transitional person. She's not supposed to be the one. All this time, I've been saying that he didn't want to get married. But the truth is, he didn't want to marry me.
And that's actually the thing that causes Harry and Sally to hook up.
Yeah.
Because she calls him over and says, I really need you. Come over. And he's comforting her as a friend. And then it just ends up being this.
Always.
There it is. Then there's, you can dry a widow's tears and see what happens.
Exactly right.
So here's the third point. Carrie Fisher's character, Marie.
Yeah.
In the beginning of the film is involved in an extramarital affair with a married man. She's single. And the big running joke is,
you sent flowers to yourself.
$60 I spent on this big, stupid arrangement of flowers. And I wrote a card that I planned to leave on the front table where Arthur would just happen to see it.
What did the card say?
Please say yes. Love, Jonathan.
Did it work?
He never even came over. He forgot this charity thing that his wife is chairman of. He's never going to leave her.
Of course he isn't.
You're right. You're right. I know you're right.
So the third point is he will never leave his wife.
No. Look, there is, if he is still carrying on that secret life, right? Mm-hmm. Or not even secret, right? He's just like, oh, she's not, you know, can't do it right now, whatever. Or she'll get all my stuff or whatever. I mean, obviously at that point he's stringing you along, right? And you're the side piece. Side piece is very difficult to convert into main piece.
Right. Okay. So reasons why in real life men will never leave their wives or their mistresses, even after years of adultery. And there are websites dedicated to either pro-adultery, so there are websites.
Which is a very odd position to take,
I think. It's a support group where you go if you're having an affair with a married man or a married woman.
Yeah.
And you say, I'm in this relationship. If it's great, we're deeply, deeply in love. He can't leave his wife right now, but he says he will. Yeah. Or she's not leaving her husband, but she says she's going to.
Right.
Chances are she's going to leave. He's not going to leave. Chances are a woman will leave her marriage.
Yeah.
Because by the time a woman starts to have a sexual affair with someone else, and I'm speaking in generalities.
Done. She's done.
She's emotionally disconnected from the relationship.
Yeah.
And she's looking for a way out. And the affair is an exit affair. There are multiple different kinds of affairs. One is an exit affair.
It's very complicated, apparently.
So women, when they have decided to have an affair, will generally leave. And then that's it. And too bad for the guy. And they're not going to really look back. They're not apt to go to marital counseling or any of that. Men who have affairs may think they want out of their marriages.
Right.
But when it comes to it and their wives discover it, they almost 100% of the time will kick their mistress to the curb and try and fix the relationship.
Interesting.
Also, additionally, they will try to fix the relationship and then they will also, at a certain point, reach out to their mistress and say, I'm sorry, I've made a terrible mistake. And the cycle will start again. And it may repeat a couple of times. And generally, the wife will consistently take the guy back.
Yeah.
And the mistress will be kicked to the curb multiple times.
That's terrible.
Anecdotally, I will tell you that the wife in that relationship is going to end up having her own exit affair leaving.
Of course.
So
as well she should, honestly. As well she should. I think that's a point in which I would feel comfortable recommending she cheat on him.
All right. So here are reasons why men will drop their mistresses even if they're caught in the act.
I'm listening.
They enjoy the idea of a mistress more than they do enjoy the idea of replacing a wife.
It's a lot of work.
as boring as being with his wife is, a cheater realizes that it's better to have that solid foundation than to venture into the unknown.
Yeah.
So because, you know, you don't know. And I've spent some time on infidelity websites.
I know, that's so weird.
It's just like,
they're like, you're not even cheating on anybody, and you're just like consuming this
trolling
as entertainment.
Oh my God, it is. It's like a soap opera.
Yeah.
There are times where women will finally get the guy, like where the men will leave their wives for
and
this
she's like,
woman.
It's not that great.
And she's like, I remember one very, very in particularly, she said she moved across the country to be with this man who had left his wife. And he used to sit on a couch in front of TV, plucking his pubes out with
tweezers. I mean, that's how you do it.
It's so Roman.
Did they just not have manscaping then?
No, I don't know. No, this was not that long ago.
Was it just like some kind of self-flagellation?
2008. But she said it was so weird and gross. And she ended up leaving.
Of course it's gross.
She ended up leaving him. He had left his wife, but she ended up going back to wherever she lived.
Because she's like, I had no idea you were this gross.
This is disgusting, right? Because, of course, in an affair, it's all romantic.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't have time to sit around doing grooming, weird grooming habits. You just got to, you know, drink a little wine and get to it.
So marriage comes with legal issues that will make most men immediately think twice. Because having to go through a divorce, hard.
Not
it's
that
tough.
Great.
No, it's not pleasant. Of course, people who cheat will also have their public image to worry about. So if you cheat and it comes out and your marriage ends because of cheating,
people are going to think you're
exposed
a dick.
They think you're a dick. If you cheat and your marriage seems to just kind of end and then, you know, a year later or whatever, you install a new person. Well, you're just now dating someone else. But boy, you seem to have a really serious connection and you've only been dating for a couple of
weeks. Seems like you guys have known each other all your lives. I don't know, just about 10 years. Yeah.
Even if a man would logically want to leave, there's also a matter of sunk cost fallacy.
Yes. Like, I've put 8 years into this relationship. Do I throw it all away on my side piece? Which, by the way, is a terrible thing to call this young woman, but that's what she is.
She should be honest with herself. Or a woman older, whoever, you know, it doesn't matter. This, whoever is on the side, whoever is the extramarital partner.
Right, right.
So sunk cost fallacy, is it a good thing to buy into?
Sunk cost fallacy is called a fallacy for a reason. It's either worth it or it isn't. Mm-hmm. And the previous 7 or 8 years really don't or shouldn't factor into it that much. Now, it's always going to a little bit, right? If you've been dating, if you go on 2 dates with someone and they seem just a little off, you're much more comfortable, you know, ghosting that person or just telling them it's not going to work out because you've only gone on 2 dates, right? But if you've gone on, you know, 1,002 dates with this person and you've been in a relationship for a while and then you're like, they're just, you know, it's just not working. It's not what I want, da-da-da. It should be, right? It's a little higher hurdle, or maybe a lot higher hurdle, to decide, okay, I'm chucking this relationship that I've spent the last 8 years on. But in reality, you should judge it based on whether the relationship is healthy, whether it's making you happy or unhappy on balance, and whether you see it continuing forward, right? That's how you should do it. That's the economists in the audience will say, yeah, that's how you should do it. Forget about how much time you spent on it. In fact, the fact that you've spent so much time on it means your perspective is probably more solid than if it were you had decided to do it in year one. If you're not happy, if you're not happy with that person, if that's not the person you want to be with, the 8 years you've put into it mean nothing, right? I mean, it doesn't change that. In fact, you know, again, it should have solidified your decision. So, yeah, the sunk cost fallacy is called a fallacy for a reason.
Okay. And lastly, because he already has his cake and eats it too.
Sure. He's not got only, you know, I mean, it's terrible to call them cows, but, you know, milk for free, paid milk. That's a lot of milk, right? He's running a dairy farm of some sort. But, yeah, I mean, of course, that's, you know, that's what he envisions, right? That's what his real goal is. I want to stay in my comfortable marriage, but I want a little excitement on the outside, right? And that is not practical unless you're a medieval Arab sheik or something, right? You don't get harems in this day and age for the most part, except for maybe some extreme Mormon cults. But you know, sister wives don't really work in America.
Generally not.
In general.
Although now, more than ever, there are non-monogamous relationships or polyamorous relationships.
Yes, there are.
Where, you know, more than one person.
I try very hard not to judge those. I mean, I don't judge it on a moral basis.
No, but it would be just, I
just feel like the math is very difficult. You know?
Yeah, I couldn't.
Somebody is going to just be unhappy. Somebody's going to be hurt.
I feel like they will, unless there is just a different way of growing up and thinking about these things and you're socialized very differently. I couldn't do that. Okay, Mark, so I want to talk about that scene that's really funny. It's very cleverly written where Harry and Jess, his best friend,
Bruno Kirby.
Yep, are at the football game and Harry's telling him about how he's getting a divorce. So this is kind of early on in the movie. And they are stuck in a wave.
I hate the wave. So it's very big in the 80s. But for me, all right, are you familiar with my philosophy on line dances?
I know that you don't like them.
Because I feel like it gives people who really can't dance a chance to dance. And I don't like that. I'm very exclusive when it comes to dancing.
You feel that people that really don't dance well shouldn't even be allowed
That's
to
right.
just,
learn to dance. Mark, it's not hard on. To do. Oh, at least like do the sidestep, you know, whatever.
Oh my God.
But it's like a hopscotch routine to like Prince, right? Mm-hmm. Terrible. So the wave is kind of like that because people who aren't sports fans are like, yeah, let's go. I hope they do the wave. It's like, fuck you.
Well, it's
I hope they don't do the wave.
It's a way to feel like a participant.
Yeah, but watch the goddamn game and cheer when good things happen.
It is also like groupthink.
Oh, it definitely is.
And social contagion.
Yeah, don't like it at all. But you know what? When the wave comes around, what are you going to do? Sit there like a schmuck and not do the wave?
I don't really like to do the wave.
No, you're just kind of like, eh. Do you half-ass throw your arms
Yeah,
up?
I might just do like my hand or whatever. Like even just like a finger.
Like a Jeep wave? Like, gotcha.
All right. So one of what the conversation there is, though, is that his wife has alerted him that she wants to end the marriage.
Yeah.
And he says to her, can't we think about this?
No, she's already thought
about
it.
And she comes back the next day and says, no, I want a separation. We can still date. And he says, well, you know, that's
first
silly.
Of all,
why
yeah,
would we date?
That's dumb.
It is dumb. Okay, but what it turns out as the story goes on is that she's in love with someone else.
Yeah.
It's all a lie. She's in love with somebody else, some tax attorney. She moved in with him.
How did you find out?
I followed her. I stood outside the building.
That's so humiliating.
Tell me about it. And you know, I knew the whole time that even though we were happy, it was just an illusion. And that one day she would kick the shit out of me.
Marriages don't break up on account of infidelity. It's just a symptom that something else is wrong.
Really? Well, that symptom is fucking my wife.
Let's talk about that life lesson. Is infidelity a symptom of something else being wrong, or is infidelity in and of itself just the wrong? It's just a wrong.
Why don't you answer first, and I'll give you my take.
Infidelity is a sign that something is wrong with the person who cheats. Now, that doesn't mean that the person who cheats is mentally unstable or anything like
Although
that.
Although it might.
It could. I think that infidelity is something that is going on with that person who, for whatever reason, and it may be that they are just conflict avoidant and they indeed want to be out of the marriage. They don't really know how to do it and they use infidelity as a way to spring them from the marriage. Doesn't ever work. Yeah. It doesn't work well anyway. I do think that it is something that it's the person. It is not the fault of the person who is being cheated on.
Right.
Because no matter how bad that person is, the best way to handle that is to just go to that person and say,
clip.
I'm done. I can't be in this,
full
this
clip.
Situation.
Yeah.
So that's my theory on this.
Okay. First of all, it has become popular wisdom that what Bruno Kirby said, and maybe it originated there or became more popular there, that what Bruno Kirby said, which it's not, that's not the cause, that's a symptom.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's become popular wisdom. I'm very suspicious of popular wisdom.
Uh-huh.
I just think like if everybody has agreed on that, there's probably something wrong with this way of thinking.
Yeah.
So then I start looking for holes.
Sure.
Right? So here's what I think.
Okay.
My answer to that is it is both a symptom of a bad relationship, obviously, right? I mean, it's good relationships typically don't involve affairs, right? Mm-hmm. But it's also the cause in a lot of cases. Because let's say someone came, like a husband comes to a wife and says, look, I've been having these feelings and I feel like, you know, I want to go and have sex with somebody else and I haven't yet. At that point, you can work around that. Right. You can work through that. You can go to counseling. You can figure out where these feelings are coming from. But if they're just going to pull the trigger and go sleep with somebody, that's what ended the relationship. I think it is a symptom of either what you said, which is that's a flawed person.
Which doesn't mean that the other person isn't flawed or that the relationship isn't flawed.
Right.
It just means that the person who decides to cheat is the one who is conflict avoidant and also is probably, well, pretty selfish, obviously.
Sure. Absolutely.
So,
but you know, it could be just the trouble is that person just a cheating douchebag, right? I mean, that could be the problem.
That could be the problem with the relationship.
Symptoms, things like I feel like I want to cheat or we're not having enough sex or whatever. Mm-hmm. That's something that people can work on. Mm-hmm. I went out and slept with your best friend. it's a little harder workaround.
That
right?
on infidelity forums is called the double betrayal.
The double B.
The double betrayal.
Yeah. Because then, do they just call it the DB?
Because then you lose the friend and and also have this wreck of a, you know, you have the betrayal with the friend and then also the betrayal with the husband or the partner.
Mostly what I've learned from you, from your relating tales from the infidelity forums, is that people who cheat or have been cheated on love acronyms.
Here's a good one. Yeah. If you cheat and then try and reconcile and then your partner cheats on you in a revenge affair, you're called Mad Hatters.
MHs. What? Why are they called Mad Hatters?
I don't know. Maybe because they're down a rabbit hole or something. I have no idea. But anyway,
going
that's
down the rabbit
acronym.
Hole was the problem, my friend.
Oh, Mark, yuck.
So our next point is, you better pay close attention to this one.
I have. I've got my eyes on you, Mark.
High maintenance versus low maintenance. Mm-hmm. Is it restricted to traditional stereotypes where women are high maintenance, men are low maintenance? Mm-hmm. Does it vary? What are the consequences of it? Can you mesh if one is one and one is the other? Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts?
All right. Well, first let's talk about what When Harry Met Sally say.
Yeah. Well,
okay. So Harry says, you're high maintenance.
She is. There is no doubt.
Okay. So his description of high maintenance is, you know, I want this and this, but on the side.
Yeah.
And I want it to be like this. And then, but on the side. And he says to her, on the side is a very big thing for you. And then there's another scene where, you know, it's a montage and she's mailing something, a bunch of letters.
Yeah.
And instead of just putting them all in and putting them in and walking away, she puts one in, puts it up, and then checks to make sure it goes down. So this is this is the way that the audience is cued into her high maintenance.
Right. And by high maintenance, we mean a lot of different things. I mean, sometimes we mean with high maintenance that, you know, they won't even get up to go make breakfast unless they've showered, dressed, put on makeup, et cetera, right? They won't go anywhere unless they're, you know, dressed the nines. But we also mean they're just demanding emotionally and, you know, that they just, they do annoying things like that, right?
Annoying things. Okay, so let's talk about.
You don't think that's annoying to, have to sit there and watch her put 45 letters in the mailbox one by one?
Well, clearly he's agitated by it.
Oh, yeah. All right. I was agitated by it watching it in the movie.
All right, but so let's talk about what do specialists think is considered high maintenance. One, self-obsessed, little empathy. This
Absolutely.
Is for women.
Yeah.
So women have little empathy for anyone else around them. They're just very self-obsessed.
It's me.
Two, she cares about what others think.
Oh, that's no doubt
Meaning,
about it.
Like, it really bothers her if she would walk out of the house without makeup because others might judge her negatively for not having
or
makeup.
Or, God forbid, somebody's wearing the same outfit. Now,
that just shocks me because that would not bother me at all. I would be like, how funny, and girl, you have good taste.
Yeah, and that's how 99% of guys would react, right? That's hilarious that we're wearing the same hoodie or whatever it is, right? Women, in general, not all, right? Often will see that as the greatest tragedy of their life.
Here's a third one. She believes that with you, she is settling.
Nobody believes that with me. Everybody's like, oh, I cannot believe my amazing luck.
All right. So that's one of the ones. But yeah, I mean, I can see that, right? Like somebody who would say, you could never do better than me. Yeah. You can never do better than me.
Narcissism. Yeah.
Well, I mean, all right. So she treats you like an errand boy. She expects you to take her clothes to the dry cleaner. She gets her a latte from her favorite coffee shop. Pick up food for her dog, pay her bills,
show up for the podcast on time,
grab her favorite salad from the local deli, loan her your credit card for those new heels, that new dress, or that new makeup.
You can borrow it if you want.
All right. So also your timeline doesn't matter. So, I mean, these are all much more significant things than she puts a letter in the mailbox. But that is a good visual cue.
Correct.
It's really
that her needs are the only that are they're paramount always, and it prevents you from kind of living life normally, mm-hmm. right? That's high maintenance, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Not just that, you know, I drive you around and take you shopping.
So what he says about Sally is that you're the worst of them.
Ooh, Ingrid Bergman. Now she's low maintenance.
Low maintenance?
There are two kinds of women: high maintenance and low maintenance.
And Ingrid Bergman is low maintenance?
An LM, definitely.
Which one am I?
You're the worst kind. You're high maintenance, but you think you're low maintenance.
I don't see that.
You don't see that? Waiter, I'll begin with a house salad, but I don't want the regular dressing. I'll have the balsamic vinegar and oil, but on the side. And then the salmon with the mustard sauce, but I want the mustard sauce on the side. On the side is a very big thing for you.
Well, I just want it the way I want it.
I know. High maintenance.
Yeah, she's definitely high maintenance.
So you're high maintenance and you're not self-aware. At least if you're high maintenance, you're on top of it. You go like, my guy, I'm high maintenance. This is really going to be like level 10 difficulty.
See, I actually like that less because you know you annoy people in this way. You're aware of it and you don't care enough to change it. Mm-hmm. I much prefer somebody who's just a bit unself-aware and is very high maintenance, but doesn't know it. So mm-hmm. maybe, now this is an outside chance, maybe if you learn that, yeah, I am pretty high maintenance, you could change your ways. But if someone is high maintenance and they know it and they tell you that, they have no intention of ever changing.
It's a zero-sum game,
and
actually.
And by the way, a certain
no
amount
one's
of,
ever going to change unless they want to change.
That's right. A certain amount of quote-unquote maintenance is fine. Right? You should care about each other's needs. You should help them out. You know, everybody's got their own personal quirks.
Yes.
You know, whatever. Right? I mean, if you won't leave the house without a shower, that's not that big of a deal, right? You can work around that. That's not going to prevent you from living your lives. If you are always an hour late because it takes you 3 hours to get ready, mm-hmm. that's a more of a problem, right? Now you're impinging on someone else's time and you're not valuing it and you're just ridiculous.
All right, so let's talk about high maintenance men.
Oh, they exist, no doubt.
Takes him longer to get ready than you.
And that's embarrassing. How long does it take me to get ready?
No, it doesn't take you long.
I could go shower to out the door in 30 minutes.
Your showers take longer than my showers, but my makeup routine
because I shave in the shower
takes longer than your showers.
Yeah, because I shave in the shower.
All right, so inability to go with the flow. Guys, that's a guy thing, right? Like looking at themselves all the time in the mirror.
Sure. Hitting the gym 24/7.
Hitting the gym. Right. Like having comments on their body feel uncomfortable to them, even though they're hitting the gym all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're very self-conscious. They only like to go to the best places. They won't go to like the dive bars. Right. And that was actually always one of my tests for guys.
Like, will you slum it?
Because I have a favorite dive bar. And if a guy could not hang with me at that dive bar, we could not hang because if you would be uncomfortable or whatever, then you can't hang with me.
Right.
Incredibly attention seeking. They're always trying to dance into a club.
Well, who would do that?
I don't know.
What kind of freak would do that?
Spend a lot of money on clothes. Drama follows him around.
Yeah.
He often gives the cold shoulder. They send you a constant stream of messages throughout the day.
That's a guy, I mean, it depends on what the messages are, right? I mean,
yeah,
if you're just having a fun conversation, great. But if he's checking on you that often, He's probably doing something shady and just wants to, it's a lack of control,
yeah.
I think. And he just wants to make sure you're not finding anything
projecting out. A little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Jealous or OCD or criticism causes him to hit the roof.
Yeah, fuck that.
Or
don't criticize me.
All right. Now, see, here's where we could come to fisticuffs, but let's tell you.
You better watch yourself.
All right, so let's say, do you think I'm high maintenance?
No, not particularly. I mean, you are, you know, you have your normal maintenance, I think. Like, you're not low maintenance. You're not like just, you know, whatever, roll out of bed, throw on my sweats, let's go type of thing.
I can do that.
But though. You've done it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, or you're like, you know, let's just, you know, stay at home and watch a movie every single night, right? No, you're medium maintenance, mm-hmm. I would say. Do you think that's correct?
Yeah, I would say that that's probably
correct. You are demanding in terms of, you know, the quality of relationship, and you need a certain intellectual exchange, right? Like mm-hmm. if we were just, you know, what are you doing? Nothing. Okay. I'm gonna watch the TV. Okay. You know what? You're not okay with that, right? You're not satisfied with that. But I would not put you as high maintenance, but I wouldn't put you as low maintenance either. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think you're, you know.
I'm in the middle.
Yeah.
And I would say that you are.
Amazing.
No, I would say that you are pretty even keeled too.
Yeah.
You have moments of high maintenance. You don't take criticism well.
I sure did. What the fuck are you talking about? How dare you? How fucking dare you?
A lot of times.
That's it. Nope. Podcast is over. I'm going home. I'm already home.
And then, of course, you do seek attention.
What? I get attention. I can't help
literally
it. I'm just so,
seek attention.
I'm such a charm magnet.
So was Harry low maintenance, do you think?
Low-ish.
I don't know. I feel like he was kind of neurotic.
But like, would he go like, no, it's Tuesday. We have to go to the deli. You know, like, is he that particular?
No, because I think he let her, and I think he went with the flow a little bit, but I don't think that he was particularly, like, you know, looking in the mirror all the time. But I think he was very needy, and he was so cynical, right?
He was
like
very
the joke of him is that he reads the end of the novel first, so that in case he dies, he knows how it ends. I mean, he was very cynical, and that can be very heavy in a friendship.
Sure.
Because you're constantly,
it's gloom and doom all the time.
Constantly trying to, like,
what kind of person
bolster their.
See, that's another problem right there. What kind of person would read the end of a book or watch the end of the movie before they watch the whole thing?
Read the whole thing. Me, 100%.
Yeah, I know. What's wrong with you?
Do it a million times because I like, no.
But
it
why?
Does not ins-
but it
does
ruins,
not enjoy.
It ruins
no, it
the
does
narrative
not,
arc.
No, it does not ruin the outcome for me at all. In
oh
fact,
my gosh, it
I
sure does.
Love to know the end before I even start
that is
the book.
Twisted.
No, I just like it.
Did you read The Natural?
I did read The Natural.
Did you know that he was not going to hit the home run before he got to the end?
No, because I read the book after I saw the film.
But in the book, he doesn't hit the home run.
No, I know.
So did you know that before you finished the book?
No, because I saw the film first is what I'm trying to tell you.
Oh, so you thought you knew the end. You were just wrong.
I mean, I had no reason to suspect that the book would end the way that it did, and it was awful.
It was awful. Oh,
we did an episode about that.
Yeah.
The Natural movie versus the book.
Episode 24, The Natural movie versus book.
Here's the next life lesson.
Lay it on me.
When Harry and Sally are talking in the park, he's asking her about her sexual fantasy, and she's relaying this sexual fantasy to him. And he's like,
terrible.
You're sort of repressed, right?
Yeah.
Is what his.
Well, because her whole fantasy was.
Okay, there's this guy.
What's he look like?
I don't know. He's just kind of faceless.
Faceless guy. Okay, then what?
He rips off my clothes.
Then what happens?
That's it.
That's it? A faceless guy rips off your clothes, and that's the sex fantasy you've been having since you were 12. Exactly the same.
Well, sometimes I varied it a little.
Which part?
What I'm wearing.
That's definitely repression.
Okay, but it's a conceit in the film to over-illustrate the fact that men and women perhaps have different types of sexual fantasies.
I'm sure we do.
And I would say 100% that that's true, and actually studies prove that that is different. Men tend to have more sexual fantasies than women and are more likely to pair those fantasies with masturbation.
I mean, that's how you get it done.
men are visual beings. We've heard this so many times. That doesn't mean women are not, but men are generally more, and they are likely to create a visual image in their head of a woman's body.
Yeah.
In a sexual way, her sexual body.
Right.
And imagine watching her or seducing her or quite often being seduced by her.
Happens to me all the time.
And then it's like sex, right? Sex happens.
Yeah.
Women, on the other hand, are typically less visual in their sexual fantasies, are usually less focused on genitals, and usually focus more on the emotional feelings of a romantic encounter.
It's like, what is your fantasy? Well, I'm surrounded by a swirling purple cloud. I'm like, are you banging it?
Women also tend to involve more olfactory and auditory memories, memories of smells and sounds.
I'm smelling chocolate. Don't bother me. Like, what?
What? No, it's not like that.
It might be.
No, it's not.
The scene I thought we were going to talk about before now, but I guess you wanted to save it for the climax, as it were, is, of course, the very famous orgasm in the deli.
The point of all of this is Harry and Sally are talking and having lunch, and Harry's relaying stories about how he's kind of a hit 'em and quit 'em dude. He goes over, has sex, and then can't wait to get out the door.
Right.
Which then later...
intimacy problems, right, obviously.
Then later when he and Sally hook up, that's indeed what he does. But at this point, she's talking to him and she's like, you're an affront to all women and I am a woman.
What are you saying, that they fake orgasm?
It's possible.
Get out of here.
Why? Most women at one time or another have faked it.
Well, they haven't faked it with me.
Right. That's right. I forgot. You're a man.
What is that supposed to mean?
Nothing. It's just that all men are sure it never happened to them, and most women at one time or another have done it, so you do the math.
You don't think that I could tell a difference?
No.
Get out of here.
Just as an aside here, is one of the most self-defeating strategies of all time. Let's say I'm cooking for you, mm-hmm, and I make meatloaf, mm-hmm, and you try it and you're like, this is god-awful. This is the worst meatloaf. But you tell me, this is the greatest meatloaf I've ever had, and I would love to have it again. Well, guess what? Then you're stuck with shitty meatloaf every Friday for the rest of your life. I'm like, I don't really like this meatloaf, but she just can't get enough of it. It's just the most self-defeating thing ever, right?
There's a lot of resentment that probably builds up around,
I am sure,
all that.
Now, look, I have heard it described as, look, sometimes you just, it's just enough and you want to go to sleep, right? And if the guy is like fully invested in, uh-huh, like, you know, no woman ever leaves me unsatisfied, right?
Right.
Look, sometimes people are going to be unsatisfied. Just be fine with it and get her tomorrow. You know what I mean? But I'm sure it happens. I mean, not to me.
Well, that was going to be my question.
Of course.
Do you think it's ever happened?
Oh, I assume so. You know, and you want to give the guy some confidence or whatever, right? Or what is maybe more likely is they just embellish, right? Mm-hmm. They gild the lily a little bit there, as it were. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, this is a pretty good one. You know what? I'm going to give him little trumpets and, you know, maybe harp music, whatever it is here. And, you know, I'm going to bring things up to another level. We're going to elevate it a little bit. That, I think, is probably, I don't know. I mean, I'm so great in so many ways. Is it really possible for me to be great at everything? Mm-hmm. It seems unlikely, right?
Yeah.
So maybe I suck. I don't know. Or maybe they're just all excellent actresses. there's some things you feel like, okay, yeah, that's real. Look, there are certain autonomic responses that are not impossible, but harder to fake than others, mm-hmm, right? But,
like,
you know, I think...
Like flushing?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's flushed. But that can happen from just regular exertion, right?
Holding your breath.
There you go. See? Christina's an expert scam artist, right? So you can fake it that way. But, you know, you like to think that there are certain things that's very hard to fake, uh-huh, like certain amounts of shaking and whatever.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if they're screaming like they've been stabbed, mm-hmm, probably fake,
yeah,
right? That's not real for the most part.
I guess that all depends, though.
Yeah, right. No, well, sure. And you know, we've all watched videos, right, where you're like, God damn, can't you just, like, fake it a little bit better and not just go, ow, 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 and just, you know, and mm-hmm, then just scream? I mean, you know, it sounds like a car alarm,
mm-hmm,
but so you like to think that you can tell, but look, I am certain, look, that in the heat of the moment, they can pass some shit off on you.
So, all right, men do fake it too, though.
Yeah, it's a little harder to get away with. I mean, I didn't even want to speculate on how they do something like that because it gets gross.
Yeah.
But yeah, sure. I'm sure they're like, yeah, I totally, that was totally great. Yeah. And they were just like ran out of steam or who knows what, right?
Well, here at the bottom line of this is that it's not always the orgasm that is the goal. It's the closeness that is the goal.
I agree.
You know, I know that there are men who just, they just want to keep trying and they're giving it the old college try.
Yeah. And the girl's like, look, it's just starting to hurt at this point.
I know. Oh.
And like, you know, everything's numb, you know. Yeah.
Let's stop.
Let's just not. Okay?
It's good.
Let's stick a pin in this and we'll circle back around tomorrow, okay?
That's true. That's true.
Send me an email.
In the movie.
Yes.
The audience knows that they both like each other.
Yes.
In the same way that Marie and Jess know that they both like each other. So correct. When they actually consummate their relationship.
Not a surprise.
Marie, they both call their friends, Marie and Jess, who've now gotten together, and they call their friends on two separate lines that they each have in the bedroom, which is wild, but okay.
Hello.
I'm sorry to call so early.
Are you all right?
No one I know would call at this hour.
I did something terrible.
What did you do?
No one I know would call at this
That's
hour.
That's so awful.
I need to talk.
What happened?
What's the matter?
Mary came over last night.
I went over to Sally's last night.
Because I was upset that Joe was getting married.
And one thing led to another.
And before I knew it, we were kissing.
To make
and
a
then
long story short,
we did it.
They did it.
That's great, Sally.
We've been praying for it.
We should have done it in the first place.
For months we've been saying you should do it.
You guys belong together.
It's like killing two birds with one stone.
It's like two wrongs make a right.
We, as the audience, also see that in certain ways. So, for instance, when they're at a party together, gathering together at Jess and Marie's, and they're playing Pictionary.
Yeah.
Then
great game.
Then Harry kind of complains about Sally's boyfriend. Oh, he seems like a great guy, but you can tell he's not really.
He's really going to tear
he
him.
He really doesn't like him. Yeah. And the same thing about Sally with Harry's date.
Emily's a little young for Harry, don't you think?
No, she's young, but look what she's done.
What has she done? She makes desserts.
Does Julian seem a little stuffy to you?
He's a good guy. You should talk to him. Get to know him.
He's too tall to talk to.
She makes 3,500 chocolate mousse pies a week.
Emily is Aunt Emily?
He took us all to a Met game last week. It was great.
You all went to a Met game together?
Yeah, but, well, you know, it was a last minute thing.
But Sally hates baseball.
Harry doesn't even like sweets.
And so you as the audience know, but they don't understand themselves.
Correct.
This article that I read suggests that, you know, often the women at least are not clear on how they feel. And I would guess that's maybe true. But at any rate, ultimately, Harry freaks out after they have the relation, after they consummate the relationship, and then he blows her off.
Yeah, that's a great move.
And she's hurt by it, and then he comes to the realization later. So what that's trying to sort of say is that Harry doesn't realize that he's in love with her.
Right, he's not self-aware enough to know that he really does care about her in that way, because he's always kind of treated her as kind of this, like, friend, but an annoying friend, like, you know, like that he tolerates
her idiosyncrasies. And then it comes to find out when they're not around.
Yeah.
He realizes he misses them.
Right.
How about this way? I love that you get cold when it's 71 degrees out. I love that it takes you an hour and a half to order a sandwich. I love that you get a little crinkle above your nose when you're looking at me like I'm nuts. I love that after I spend a day with you, I can still smell your perfume on my clothes. And I love that you are the last person I want to talk to before I go to sleep at night. And it's not because I'm lonely, and it's not because it's New Year's Eve. I came here tonight because when you realize you want to spend the rest of your life with somebody, you want the rest of your life to start as soon as possible.
Do you like When Harry Met Sally? Do you think it's a good movie?
Oh, yeah. First of all, it's one of the best rom-coms of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's just no doubt.
Did you like it when it first came out? Did you see it when
it first came out? I'm sure I did. Yeah. And it's just a very good movie, you know? And I mean, I always have liked Rob Reiner's comic sensibilities, right? I mean, you can almost watch any movie that he made.
Yeah.
Because they're just almost always good.
They're funny.
Yeah. And I like their pacing. And of course, Billy Crystal, especially back then, was, you know, a very big deal comedically. I mean, he was, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Mark, I think that wraps up this wonderful episode. I always love these. These are fun to do. Come and follow us on Twitter. Oh, please come and follow me on my Twitter at ChristinaGenX. On Twitter, Mark is at Mark Eats Peach. And we have a podcast Twitter, which is at Extemporaneous2.
Correct.
Mark, we have a Facebook group at Gen Extemporaneous and a Patreon. What is our Patreon address?
It is patreon.com/GenXtemporaneous,
where we offer multiple extra episodes a month featuring things like Video Thunderdome, extended conversations about our Gen Extemporaneous podcast episodes, and
Internet Archaeology.
Internet Archaeology.
One of my favorites.
It is. All right.
And it's only like a latte a month.
It is.
For God's sake.
$5 a month will get you at least...
Oh, yeah. At least three extra episodes, often more.
That is correct. All right. So thank you very much for coming and listening to us each week. We really appreciate it.
And with that, we are out, people. Peace out, Cub Scout.
Bye.
This is a production of Conceptual Ozone LLC. Music for this podcast was composed and performed by Tom Snedeker. Christina LaRusso is executive producer.